This is The Gay Life on KSAN. Hi, I'm Randy Alfred. Later this morning, we'll go to City Hall and talk to... Okay. This is The Gay Life. Hi, I'm Randy Alfred. Later in the show, we'll talk to Harry Britt in his office at San Francisco City Hall and to Bernice Becker, Bay Area co-chair of Parents and Friends of Gays. And our first guests on The Gay Life this morning are Glenn McElhenney of Berkeley, a 20-year resident of Santa Clara County, and Ed Sebesta of San Francisco, who works in Sunnyvale in Santa Clara County. And both of them are here representing the Santa Clara Valley Coalition for Human Rights. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And good morning, Ed. How are you doing?
All fine.
Santa Clara Valley Coalition for Human Rights is now involved in a very important struggle. You want to tell us about that?
Yes. Last summer, after a series of presentations, first before the Human Rights Council, then Santa Clara Board of Supervisors, and then another separate one in front of San Jose City Council, we got two ordinances passed. Now, the first ordinance was passed for the county, and it was to cover the unincorporated territory of the county. Now, there's 16 municipalities in Santa Clara County, and this was to be a model ordinance which the municipalities could follow. And the next first municipality which followed was San Jose City. And as they were passed, there was a lot of vocal opposition.
From church groups.
From church groups, fundamentalists and Mormons primarily. And so very quickly they went out and gathered some signatures. And they gathered enough signatures first to suspend the Santa Clara County ordinance and then the San Jose City ordinance before they could go into effect. That was late August and early September.
And then there will be referendums on June 3rd.
Right.
On both of them.
Both ordinances. So far, we know the county will be yes on A, which is for us, and we haven't gotten the number for the city.
Okay, so in Santa Clara County, a yes on A vote will be a vote to retain the gay rights ordinance.
Correct.
Yeah, within the county.
Now, the county ordinance applies only to the unincorporated areas of the county.
Right.
But all residents of the county get a chance to vote on it?
Correct. All residents will vote on it.
So that people who live in San Jose will get a chance to vote on their city ordinance and on the county ordinance as well?
Correct. For instance, but someone in Sunnyvale would just merely vote on the county ordinance.
Even though Sunnyvale is an incorporated area?
It's an incorporated area, okay. Yes.
So all residents of the county get to vote on county ordinances which apply only in areas that are unincorporated?
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I've been confused about exactly that.
Many
city
people
county
have.
Stuff.
Many people.
Living up here in peninsular San Francisco, where the city and county are the same thing, yeah. And having my previous experience living in Alameda County, where almost all of the northern part of the county is incorporated, mm-hmm. So that it doesn't seem to make any difference. Now, both of you living on the east and west side of this latitude of the bay are getting involved in something that's going on in the South Bay, and it's because, Glenn, you lived there, you grew up there.
Mm-hmm. Grew up there
in Santa
years.
Clara County. Ed, you work down there.
Right.
There hasn't been much interest to this, which is going on essentially in the background, in the backyard of San Francisco,
exactly. Yeah.
Which is regarded internationally as a center of gay rights.
Yeah.
Yeah, the interest has been very slow in developing. I've been having a table on 18th and Castro, and the first week, I had the name of the coalition, Santa Clara Valley, but people would come up and they ask me, what is this about, you know, and I would explain there would be a referenda. So I realized that I needed more signs for, say, referendum. But since then, I'm getting a little bit more interest and a little bit more awareness, but I would say a lot of people still don't know what's going on.
Yeah. It is a little worrisome, Randy. We haven't gotten the word out. It could be a little bit better, but it is a little scary that this is going on so close to, you know, the northern part of the county and the northern Bay Area. And it is really important that it does pass and that we are able to retain the ordinances for our own sake here also, you know, up in the northern Bay Area. One of the good points is that Palo Alto is supposed to be that municipality of Palo Alto, which is where I'm from, has right now shelved their gay rights ordinance. It's currently being shuffled around in their Human Rights Commission, and they are shelving it. Until the vote.
I thought Palo Alto already had a gay rights ordinance.
They've
Is this
written
a strengthening
it up. No.
Perhaps a clarification. A lot of the municipalities have ordinances which cover municipal employees.
Okay.
And some have various exemptions, and there are about four or five of them. And so it's just municipal.
Palo Alto, Cupertino.
Could
had
be.
One.
There was, I think, Sunnyvale has one for municipal employees. Okay.
But the ones that we're talking about now that have been made subject to repeal on June 3rd.
Cover everyone.
Are comprehensive gay rights ordinances that apply not only to the city and city contractors and county contractors, but to everyone within the county.
Yeah, right. Private too.
It's not only just
destroy any effort.
Yeah, it's not just employment, it's also public accommodation, housing, whereas the other ones are just solely due for employment.
Okay. So they're essentially bills similar to the ones now in effect in San Francisco, in effect in Berkeley, and being proposed in Oakland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matt Coles, Matt Coles wrote the whole series, and these are two of his also.
Right. Each, and they get more refined as they go along and meet local conditions and so forth.
Yeah. More comprehensive.
So both of the elections will be held at the same day, which is also the day of the California primary.
Correct.
In which we have three candidates on the Democratic side with a variety of positions on gay rights. Now, Governor Brown has made gay rights an active part of his campaign and has, in fact, been using money from the gay community as seed money to try and pump up the rest of his campaign. Senator Kennedy has said, after repeated questioning, that he would sign an executive order banning discrimination in federal service, and that he would, I think he has said that he would sign a gay rights bill if it passed through Congress. Not saying that he would push for it, but that he would sign it. Mm. President Carter has not moved on the Immigration and Naturalization Service. When he was in Sacramento in November of 78, he, at the last minute, told people to vote no on 6. Now, of all three of these, or two of them, because it's possible that Governor Brown, or it's possible that there may be no contest in the Democratic primary, Ronald Reagan in the Republican primary, he also had urged a no on 6 vote. Is any move being made to get the various presidential contenders come out against repeal? Also, there's been this fight going back and forth between Connally and Bush about who is softer on gay rights.
I think what we'll ask how they stand, and this is one of the questions will be coming up. We have not approached them as of yet. On the other hand, I feel that they, like many cities in California, a lot of politicians elsewhere, are just waiting to see how Santa Clara Valley comes out. I think they're waiting and watching, and we're hopefully we'll get them to say something for us before the June 3rd primary. I would like to see a June 3rd victory. To me, would be a little thunderbolt to go to the White House and zap Carter in the posterior. But I'm not quite sure what we can expect out of them, any three of them, on the Democratic side. As for Republicans, who can say?
Yeah, the issue does have national importance. In other words, there are other places also shelving their ordinances and waiting for the regular general populace vote. And therefore, it is appropriate that they do take a stand. It does have national importance that it is coming up in Congress. And there are people waiting to see what's going to happen.
Now, if we look at repeal efforts, we see that the one in Dade County repealed the ordinance. The ordinance was repealed in Wichita, was repealed in St. Paul, was repealed in Eugene. Now, those are all from June of 1977 until May of 1978. In November of 1978, Prop 6, the first statewide gay rights electoral issue, it's the first time it ever came statewide, Proposition 6, which was clearly anti-gay and anti-freedom, was defeated. In the same day, the Portland Gay Rights Ordinance withstood an attempt at repeal. So that if we look at the statistics and count, and we can say, well, it's 4-2, but we could also say that the two most recent ones look good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would look at it that we have made progress, and not only progress in people being educated. Every battle, we go over the same issues again and again. I think that that's one change, and people have become educated. And there has been a change of public attitudes. On the other hand, I think gay people themselves are becoming better educated as to how to run a campaign. I think Seattle and the No on 6 campaigns were commented from the Body Politic and elsewhere that these are more grassroots campaigns. These are campaigns where gays went public. They went to the people and they spoke to the people, whereas Dade County And I've heard negative feedback on Dade County from across the country. They didn't go out, they didn't meet people, and they tended to avoid grassroots. And also discussing issues, I think, is an approach we're taking that the earlier campaigns didn't discuss. And also, I think that for us, we have certain assets or certain advantages which none of the other campaigns had. For instance, we have Mike Nye, who's with AFL-CIO for the Santa Clara County. He's a business representative. He's our co-chair. We have people from NOW. We have.
Is this a gay person who's been active in labor, or a straight person who is becoming active in gay rights?
He's a straight person who's a friend of our other co-chair and who is pitching in.
Okay.
And our Johnny Staggs has a lot of accumulated experience in there, and now I think she's beginning to get those contacts to help. We got MAPA, the Mexican American Political Association, both state and local, and we have Spanish-speaking gays on the steering committee, and we have Spanish-speaking gays there. And I think that's very important when you consider that a good deal of the people are Spanish-speaking or Chicano in our area, especially in San Jose.
So far I hear the coalition consisting of, well, starting with gay people as the most immediately threatened, labor, who see a labor and employment issue as well as a solidarity issue. Women, you mentioned National Organization for Women.
National Lawyers Guild.
And Chicanos.
Yeah.
Will that, as a coalition, be sufficient to present repeal, or is there going to have to be even further outreach?
We're making outreach to the religious people. Myself, I'm making outreach to gay engineers and the engineering community. Right now, the electrochemical, but I wrote a letter to Electronic Engineering Times.
Now then, the engineering community is essentially north of San Jose, in the north part of the county.
Well, it's all around.
Southern
but they
peninsula.
Live. They live all over the county.
They live all over the county.
All the workers.
And all the plants all over the county, too. I mean, they're just everywhere. They're just sort of like crabgrass, you know. I'm one, too, by the way. So we're making an outreach. We have people in the corporate world who are working with the manufacturing people, and they're... A very interesting incident happened when the guys was working with one of the companies, and we've had a little trouble with the Santa Clara Manufacturing Group, first being against it, now rescinding their position against it to a neutral position, and the vice president of personnel said, if you guys don't change, I'm going to go out and hire all your gay engineers. And they said, hold it a second, I changed that. I'll hire your good gay engineers. You can have the rotten ones. So we're trying to get the whole broad spectrum, And like I said, Johnny, having worked in the community and worked for a long time for a lot of other people.
It's Johnny Staggs, who
Staggs,
is
Staggs,
Staggs, Staggs, excuse me. Okay, he's one of the co-chairs.
She's now campaign manager.
Campaign
we have
manager.
Constant Carpenter with National Lawyer Guilds as a co-chair.
What about Congress members and other prominent politicians in the area?
Pete McCluskey is ex officio member. And he's endorsed it. Of course, he supported the bills in Congress for quite a while.
He's a Republican.
Republican, yes. Other officials have not been so forthcoming, and we hope that they will be more concerned in the future. But at this moment, so far, that's the first congressman we've gotten endorsement
from. What about Senator Cranston? Have you spoken to him yet?
We will be speaking to him.
He's got a pretty good position on gay rights.
We're hopeful with Mr. Cranston. Some of the others I'm not so sure about. But...
Okay, so that's all in the process of lining up endorsements. I also remember last year when Bob Gonzalez was in the runoff for the District 7 supervisorial seat in San Francisco, he promised that win or lose, he would go to San Jose and help fight the defeat of those resolutions. So people up here should remember that and go back to him now that he's needed.
Well, that's
because
very
he's got a high visibility
in
the Spanish-speaking community.
Mm-hmm.
What about money? It takes money to run a campaign,
it
too.
It certainly does, and we certainly can use it. And we're working on raising it for the billboards and raising it for radio spots and raising it for our speakers bureau. And we have a campaign headquarters, and we have a campaign manager, and one other staff person, and small signs and the various things you need to run for a campaign. And we're doing fairly well so far. I feel that we've raised... a fair amount of money, not a lot, but just starter money, enough to get some of the mailers out and get it rolling. But we need plenty more, I tell you.
We'll give a whole set of contact numbers later in this interview. What's the 10 for 10 program?
The 10 for 10 program is an innovative program. I think it's the first of its kind ever any place. In fact, when I first proposed it, I told them it would never work. but I'm wrong. 10 for 10 works is this. The bars have a surcharge on their prices, or they add a door charge and a surcharge on the prices, and the surcharge is 10%. And what this means is 10% for 10%, and that is 10% surcharge for 10% of the population, which is gay. And most of the bars and baths and other gay entertainment places have joined the program, and they're contributing so much per month on a monthly basis to the campaign. And this money has been immensely valuable.
And that money is beginning to come in.
Right. It's beginning to come in January, a little bit in December, more in January, and it's continuing.
Will it be a predictable amount so that you can count on it?
I think so long as gay people continue going to bars and baths and elsewhere, I think that we can expect it to come in.
That seems certainly reasonably predictable.
There's been a little controversy, but by and large, I think that the vast majority of the gay business community has pulled together, and I think the vast majority of the community has pulled together. And so,
what's the controversy been about?
Well, some people think 45 cents surcharge for one evening is too much to pay for their human rights. And some people disagree on that. I feel that, however, it's more than necessary. This money has allowed us to continue. Without it, I think we'd be in very deep trouble. And I think that as for the customers of all the bars, is that this ordinance, I think, will have a great impact on both the quality of their life, but also employment prospects. And I think it
never went in to effect, did it? Didn't the signatures come?
It was suspended just days before it would have gone to effect for the county, and about a week before it would have gone into effect for the city. The opposition has strong support too.
Lots of money? Is it being raised in churches?
The money is very curious. Rick Harrington raised $6,800 to have anti-gay, anti-Jenna Gray Hayes ads. She's the mayor of San Jose. Because of her original support, even though she rescinded later, of the Gay Pride Day, or Gay Pride Week, excuse me, resolution. And then it came time to account for how that money was spent. It was called FAMPAC, Family Something Another. And he refused to reveal his sources, and he was fined $600-some. And so we don't know where the money comes from exactly, officially. But I suspect a good deal will come from primarily church members.
We're talking to Glenn McElhenney and Ed Sebesta of the Santa Clara Valley Coalition for Human Rights about the June 3rd simultaneous referenda on the city and county gay rights ordinances in San Jose and Santa Clara County. People who live in San Jose, how can they get in contact with the Santa Clara Valley Coalition? What's the San Jose contact numbers? It's pencil and paper time, people, so get ready to take down phone numbers and addresses.
Okay, it's 280-7460. And we have a campaign headquarters.
Okay, the phone number again is area code 408?
Right.
And what's the number?
280-7460.
And Glenn, what's the address for people who want to write to the Santa Clara Valley Coalition for Human Rights?
We've got a P.O. Box, 2066. San Jose, 95109.
So it's Post Office Box 2066, San Jose, 95109.
Our open house was yesterday evening, and our address for campaign headquarters, and we need helpers, is 330 South 3rd Street, number D.
330 South 3rd, number D, for people who want to drop by the headquarters.
We have plenty of work that can be done.
Okay, what about people who are living in San Francisco or Berkeley or Walnut Creek? What can they do to help? Will there be busloads of volunteers going down, or would that be resented as outside organizers?
Well,
when it comes down to the crunch, are bodies going to be transported to walk precincts?
Yes, we certainly hope so, and it's very important. I think we want to avoid a high visible San Francisco profile because the opposition has made it very clear that they're trying to have anti-San Francisco theme to their campaign. On the other hand, the precinct workers and door walkers, they're not going to ask for identification. Are you a bona fide San Jose person? There's plenty of things needed to be done right now in San Francisco. And at this time, we have meetings every Thursday at 150 Eureka.
That's at the MCC.
Right. And it's at 7:30 p.m. And I'm trying to have tables out, and we're trying to get fundraising activities up in San Francisco.
So there's a San Francisco support group, essentially,
right.
Yeah,
for the Santa Clara Valley Coalition.
Yeah.
And it meets
we do have meetings.
Thursdays, 7:30, MCC, 150 Eureka in San Francisco, and that's just a couple of blocks from 18th and Castro.
Right.
Is there a separate East Bay support group, or is this
both?
for both.
We don't have enough volunteers to develop that separation.
There are some people coming over from the East Bay, and I think eventually the East Bay will come through. But at this point, it's kind of grassroots.
And when the time comes when volunteers aren't going to be needed, are going to be needed to walk precincts in San Jose and Santa Clara County, if they go down in busloads, there's no reason why you can't have fun on the bus ride. No one ever said that politics has to be all grim. And for San Franciscans who may be having a chilly spring, the weather in Santa Clara County tends to be nice and hot. And
it's warmer than San Francisco, yes. Yeah. It's sheltered by the mountains, and it's fairly warm, much warmer.
It's it's more like an inland city than a in a coastal
it's
city.
It's also true that we will need volunteers from up here in the Northern Bay, because the San Jose people, Santa Clara people, are more in the closet. They're not they don't have the freedoms that we do up here, and therefore I think we can gather more people that are willing to walk. You know, you don't have to be gay to support it, but you know, for somebody who's in the closet, that might be a little scary. So we are, you know, going to try to get people from up here to go down and help us out.
So, and people who want to talk to the Santa Clara Valley people up here in San Francisco, Berkeley, go to the Thursday meetings or drop by the table, which will be at 18th and Castro.
And every weekend when it's not raining.
Every weekend when it's not raining.
Yeah, and or you can phone the San Jose office and find out, because we do have some fundraisers coming up. And they will be, we don't have dates or times yet, but there will be some stuff coming up and ways that they can plug in to help us out. So they can always phone the San Jose office and get information.
All right. We have it staffed now. As of yesterday and Friday with the open house, there is someone there at the phone almost all times, and we'll have answering service also, so you can leave a message when we're not there. It is only an hour commute down there, so actually if you wanted to go down there and volunteer directly, that can also be done. But we do need some volunteers who are up in San Francisco
to coordinate the other volunteers, fundraising, money.
Yeah, it's mainly fundraising right now. The precinct workers probably won't be needed till towards the last month or so.
I would think so, yes.
But the money, they need money. We all need money. Get it going.
Okay, anything that either of you want to say before we wrap up? It's hard to emphasize how important this is, and in February it still looks...
It's not too hard to emphasize how important it really is, because it is so important. And everybody's waiting to see what's going to happen here. And I don't know if people, especially gay people, gay and lesbians up here in the North Bay, know that it will have a great effect, even though they might be in, quote, the Mecca, San Francisco or East Bay, for women especially. It won't be our Mecca anymore. If we lose in San Jose and Santa Clara, the domino theory might work again in any other places, and we need it. We need it there, and we need it here.
Well, there is, presently, I heard over KCBS, there is an anti-gay ordinance gathering signatures. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. It's by a Monterey religious group. But I think it reminds us that after a big defeat, there will be a lot of people for political gain willing to have statewide anti-gay initiatives or lead a campaign down in Los Angeles to repeal their initiative. I don't think we're so secure that we can allow a defeat to happen. And a lot of people will be watching. I think people think about AB1, and they talk about Democratic Gay Rights Plank. Well, if San Jose goes under, I think you can forget that for quite a few years.
Yeah. And it's not hard to say that Briggs might be shuffling right in on the coattails with another school teacher's initiative. You know,
or
trying
worse.
To get up this. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you very much, Glenn McElhenney and Ed Sebesta of the Santa Clara Valley Coalition for Human Rights.
Thank you.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN. And it's time for our regular weekly visit with Supervisor Harry Britt at his City Hall office. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning, Randy.
Well, now that the New Hampshire primary is over and some of the first round of sorting out has occurred, people are looking forward to the rest of the primaries, in California in particular. What's shaping up with gay politics and 1980 presidential race?
There's a whole lot more going on in the gay movement nationally particularly around the Democratic Party's process than a lot of people realize. My concern, or one of my chief concerns, is that Jimmy Carter not walk away with the Democratic nomination. Governor Brown has gone a very long way in standing up for gay issues. And as long as Governor Brown is a contender, Carter will have to deal with gay issues. Senator Kennedy has now done enough on the gay issue that gay people, in my judgment, can support Kennedy. As far as I'm concerned, gay people shouldn't be supporting anyone who has not taken a stand on giving an executive order. Regardless of what our politics may be on other issues, as gay people, we simply must hold together and not support any presidential candidate who is not going to acknowledge that we have the same rights that other people have. Kennedy has done this. Brown has done this. Probably the most important thing going on is the pressure on Jimmy Carter. We understood in 76 that he had made a commitment to sign an executive order giving gay people equal treatment in the federal government. Now the Carter people are falling all over themselves to deny they ever said that. They're trying to make general promises without making a commitment on that. A lot of gay people feel that the Carter camp has been less than honest in their dealing with the gay community.
Also, there's been a lack of action in the Immigration and Naturalization Service, which is directly under the president's control.
Absolutely. And there's no way you can deal with immigration other than seeing it as a Jimmy Carter issue. If you or I were president of the United States, we wouldn't be having any problems with the immigration of gay people. You can be assured of that. And Mr. Carter certainly has it in his power to deal with that issue. Until he does that sort of thing, I don't think we can take him seriously as a presidential candidate. And my hope is that the Democratic fight will remain live. I think Kennedy is still alive very much. Carter did not get a majority of the votes in New Hampshire, despite all the noise he's been making about the country sticking together in a time of national crisis. Kennedy is certainly still alive. I'm not ready to write Brown off yet as a viable force in some of the other primaries. So we've still got a fight on our hands, and that gives us the maximum leverage possible.
Do you think Carter might be waiting until after the southern primaries before making any concessions on the gay issues? Because those are all over well before California.
Absolutely. Obviously, it's not in Carter's short-term political interest that he make his announcement about an executive order in the state of South Carolina. But that doesn't mean that we should be too understanding of Mr. Carter's problems. If he really cares about human rights, he should be making that announcement right now, wherever he happens to be standing. And as far as I'm concerned, the longer he waits, the more credibility he loses.
What about the Republicans?
What about the Republicans? I've never been a great fan of the Republican Party, and as far as I'm concerned, anyone who is comfortable politically spending a career in that Neanderthalian organization has a whole lot of credibility problems with me. Obviously, the Republicans are falling all over themselves to be, at best, avoid the gay issue and more commonly accuse each other of being pro-gay. It's a very ugly scenario. Connally has been particularly bad on our issue. Mr. Bush's position has been that he opposes the codification of gay rights because he sees it as some sort of threat to our national morality. That is an absolutely unacceptable position, of course. I didn't shed any tears that Reagan won in New Hampshire, quite frankly.
And beyond candidates, what about platforms, specifically the Democratic Party platform?
This is the real fight for us, more important perhaps at this point in history than the bill in the National Congress, because at the Democratic Convention, we have a relatively progressive group of people, more progressive than the group that sits in Washington on a regular basis. We have a lot of clout, particularly in California. The California Democratic Party has adopted a gay rights plank in its platform. That plank will go to the convention in August in New York. We will have there a sizable contingent of gay delegates. There's a national drive. There's something called a National Convention Project for the Democratic Party that we're raising money for. People that want to help should call my office, and we'll be glad to put you in touch with the right people. We will have a large number of gay delegates there. We hope we will also have a lot of gay people out in the streets demanding that the convention focus on our issue. And I don't think it's out of the ballpark to think that we'll get a gay rights plank out of the Democratic Party this year.
Okay, that about wraps it up for this morning. Thank you, Supervisor Harry Britt.
Thanks again, Randy.
And our next guest this morning on The Gay Life is Bernice Becker, the co-chair of Bay Area Parents and Friends of Gays. Good morning, Bernice.
Good morning, Randy.
Parents and Friends of Gays is a large organization in the Bay Area? Small, medium size? How would you characterize it?
It's difficult to characterize because the nature of it is a service organization, and most people come down once or twice and don't come back again, which seems to be, it fits their particular need, that the trauma passes after a couple of meetings. Our core group is about 12.
And you meet how often?
We meet once a month. It might also be interesting to note that there are about 100 such groups around the country at this point, and that they first started in New York City in 1973, and that at this point, too, there are about 5 groups outside the country in Canada, England, the Philippines, Holland. It's very exciting, I feel.
Is there any national or international organization that ties the local groups together? Do you have an annual conference?
We met for the first time nationally in Washington, D.C. in October.
At the time of the National March.
At the time of the National March. And at that time, there wasn't very much time available to us. But in the time that we had, we agreed on a name for our organization. And we agreed that if it became necessary to act nationally in connection with Washington, that we would set up, which we've done, about 6 regional contacts around the country. But each group is autonomous. It's a loose federation.
Okay, and is it that time you chose the name Parents and Friends of Gays? It's previously been known, to me at least, as just Parents of Gays. What was the reason that occasioned the name?
Well, because there are numbers of straight people who are not parents. They are relatives. They're close friends. Of gay people who are interested in being involved. We have one of our best supporters is a Catholic sister who belongs to our group.
So when you say that a lot of members or a lot of people will come just once or twice, this is after they've just learned that a child or their children are gay and they feel some need to talk to parents who are in a similar situation?
Right. When parents first learn that they have a gay child or gay children, they're very distraught, very isolated, and they're also not in a position where they want to speak to any of their relatives and friends and yet have a great need to share this and to discuss it. And the parents' groups are the only place, the only safe atmosphere for them to discuss it with other parents who are in similar situation.
So in a typical meeting, you're not necessarily just doing organizational business, but in fact are providing emotional support and listening and talking and sharing experiences. And so
right. You're kind of bringing me into something that I'm interested in saying, and that is that,
that
most of the parents in the group would like the group, or feel that the main purpose, almost the sole purpose of the group, should be a rap group for parents alone. There are others of us, we're in the minority right now, who are beginning to understand the potential political strength of the parents' groups in the gay rights movement. And we want to go beyond, and we do go beyond the scope of the rap group.
For instance, the political strength of, say, the impact at a hearing in Sacramento of
That's
having
right.
a group called Parents of Gays.
Right. As a matter
or
of fact,
in the Gay Freedom Day parade.
Yeah. I think that a very dramatic example of the potential strength, and not potential strength, but the strength right now, despite the small numbers of parents involved politically, is that in Sacramento at a hearing, committee hearing last year, one of the legislators acknowledged the fact that one mother turned his vote around. And
that's a vote.
That's
a vote in an influential committee.
That's right, and that's a vote that I believe that most gay groups could not have gotten. I came to understand this when I was in Washington D.C. in October during the march, and we went to see our legislators the following day on Monday, and they really perked up the minute they heard. They were introduced to all the various gay groups, and then when they heard parents of gay, they you know, you got a very distinct feeling that they were taking special note of it, because here, listen, we're not just dealing with gays now, we're dealing with straight people, the respectable straight people in the gay people's lives. And
parents who haven't rejected their children.
That's right, that's right. And also, I think that politicians see this in terms of votes. As long as the parents didn't concern themselves in their gay children's lives, they didn't have to worry about them politically. But if they're out there marching with their gay children, then any intelligent politician sees the handwriting on the wall. Because if we just stop and think that for every gay person, there are two parents, there are relatives, there are friends, I think that this might almost be a majority, or certainly one of the largest minorities in the country.
If everybody who was a parent or friend of a gay person,
right,
joined the organization, it would be an immensely large organization.
Right. Well, that's why I speak in terms of potential strength. But I'm very optimistic. I think that that things can be turned around. You know, when people say to me, you know, it takes a long, long time for society's attitudes to change, why are you so impatient? I don't think society's attitudes ever change unless we address the issue. There are, you know, attitudes that have existed for hundreds and hundreds of years when people were not talking about them and were not consciously trying to change them. But I believe that attitudes can change very very quickly if people really want to, and if they believe it can change, and if they really work at it.
And if the leverage is put at the right places. I mean, just mm-hmm. the name Parents of Gays is one that's going to strike people because it contains words that you don't usually see in the same context. So
that's
that it's
right.
got that power of taking this gays, which still for most people out there in America, despite the fact that it's a better word than queer or fag mm-hmm. or dyke, still has some negative connotation for many Americans, whereas parents has this whole sanctity about it. And you put the two together,
right,
and it really gives you power in having made that connection and forced people to see those two words or
right.
hear those two words together. How long have you personally been involved in Parents of Gays?
Since 1973. I started with the group in New York City when it first started. And then when I came out here 4 years ago, there was no group here at the time. A group had started the year before and then folded and that sort of thing. And there was one woman who was the coordinator and trying to get a group started, and she was looking for one other parent, and you know, I plugged into that, and since then I've been working here in San Francisco and the Bay Area.
And you are yourself the parent of how many gay children?
Three gay children.
Out of three. Hit the jackpot.
Uh-huh. Right.
It's interesting. To what do you attribute your luck?
Yeah, I'm often.
Or was it skill?
I'm often asked that, and I said, "Well, you know, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth." I mean,
all right. Well, it's interesting. I suppose my mother raised a gay son, and my older sister, who is straight, however, has a circle of friends that includes many, many gay men, so that. I don't know what it is, whether it's nurture or nature, whether
mm-hmm.
it's genes
mm-hmm.
or child raising or
mm-hmm.
or just good attitude, maybe. But so you became involved when you came out here because you wanted to work politically in it, or because at the time you also wanted the support and the mutual support back and forth of other parents of gays?
I think given society's attitude, I don't think that our problems at this point around homosexuality can ever be totally resolved. Even though I have come to the point where I totally accept my children's lifestyle, and I fully believe and understand that it's a natural, normal, alternative lifestyle. There are some very real problems that I have living in this world. I mean, I'm out there in the straight world. I have to, listen to homophobic jokes. Fortunately, I am now out in all areas of my life, and even in my office, although I no longer have to listen to these things and not respond. As a matter of fact, I have little seminars going all the time in my office with the law students. They all know the organization that I'm involved with, and they will, you know, approach me sometimes with questions, and the first thing I say usually is that, look, as far as I'm concerned, it's a natural, normal lifestyle. And that's really what I have to say. I don't have anything else to say. I have no defense. There is no defense needed. And they'll say, oh, now, come on, Bernice. Now, you know that that's not so. You know that it's not a you know, how many people are gay out of the whole? I said, well, if you're talking about difference, yes. You know, very small percentage of the people in this world have blue eyes. You know, they are different.
Or are left-handed.
Right. But I said, you know, you people deal with facts. You're law students. I said, okay. I have an assignment for you. You go home and you think about it and you come back and tell me why you think it's not normal. You know, I'm making...
Shift the burden of proof.
Right.
They're lawyers. They understand that.
That's right. You know, and they just, they looked and they couldn't argue with that. And almost invariably they come back and they say, hey, you know, I couldn't come up with anything, you know. And I'm not saying that from that point on that this person has totally rid himself of all homophobia, but it certainly has made a very, very strong impression. My whole problem is where and how do you talk to people? How do you reach people?
You're doing it on the job, but you're doing consciousness raising. You are perhaps in a luckier position than most people in that regard, in that, for instance, with law students, if it's law students you're dealing with, they are presumably bright, intelligent, verbal, like to think and talk and listen and hear those things so that you can conduct, as you said, seminars that are in fact seminars, that is. But it's a very important thing, I think, when we communicate with people about anything. The most important thing is if we're going to tell them the truth, we have to tell it to them in their own language or they won't hear it. They won't understand it. You can't assume that by standing on a mountaintop and saying things the way you see them, that anyone else will understand it. And I think that what you're doing in for instance, that shifting the burden of proof thing, in fact, is an implicit recognition of knowing that you can't use the same approach to everyone. You've got to deal with people with – you're telling the truth. You're not being in any way not true to your vision. It's just that you always have to tell it in a way in the language of the people you're communicating to.
Yes, that's true. But I think that to a large extent, I think I pretty much speak the same way to almost everybody. And I think that when you just say to people, look, I have three gay children and they're not sick, and I know my children better than anybody else in the world, I think I've raised them. I have special insight as a parent. Just making that statement, I think, has to attract people's attention and have them think about it.
Are there any other multiple mothers in your group?
Oh, yes. There's another parent in my group who has three gay sons living right here in San Francisco. There's another parent that has two gay children of four. The woman has three gay sons, also has one daughter who's not gay. I hold the record for the highest percentage, as well as the highest number.
And is the group equally mixed of fathers and mothers, mostly mothers?
No, mostly mothers. There are two fathers at this point in the core group, and then there are about 8 to 10.
What about in the people who show up? Are mothers also more likely to come for the of rap sessions?
Oh, yes, yes. Almost invariably, it's the mother who will come first.
Fathers and are not, they have more difficulty than mothers in dealing with it?
It appears to be so. As a matter of fact, one of our parents who's been coming down for almost 2 years said that she's doing it against her husband's wishes. Not only doesn't he come with her, but he's... He's angry with her for coming.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN, and we're talking to Bernice Becker, the mother of three gay children and the co-chair of Bay Area Parents and Friends of Gays. Does that indicate something about still problems with male, masculine and feminine roles, that fathers have more difficulty dealing with gay children than mothers, that they don't want to talk about it outside the family, even in situations which they are assured will be supportive, or in the case of this one where the mother must be bringing back feedback that she is getting something out of these meetings because she's continuing to return to them.
Mm-hmm. Despite
everything that's happening, men still have more trouble dealing with emotional reactions in this mm-hmm. society, it would seem.
I don't know that I'm fully qualified to draw a fully comprehensive.
You're probably as qualified as anyone, so go on and draw it.
my reaction from the fathers that are there, or what the women tell us, the mothers tell us about the fathers, is that it seems as if the men are more easily threatened in their sexuality. I think that society sort of demands that men have this macho image, and after all, their own children are an extension of themselves. And here is this, gay son who is not macho. That he spawned. I mean, you know, and
some
they
of
feel
the gay sons I know are probably more macho than
yeah.
their fathers. but that's a question of the current style out in the streets, I guess.
Yeah.
Is there any difference between parents of gay men and parents of lesbians that you know of? For instance, in how people react when they hear the news, or whether or not they're more likely to become politically involved, or?
No, I haven't seen any pattern. There are more parents of gay men in the group than lesbians, and I think that that's a reflection of the fact that there are more gay men in the city than there are lesbians. It kind of bothers me. One of the functions of the group that I think is very important is that we meet once a month for our own rap group, and then we also meet usually once a month or once every other month with a gay group. And this is, we have found to be very, very helpful to both the gay people and to the parents themselves. It's much easier for them to talk to another gay person.
Who's not their child.
Right.
Do you ever have meetings together with parents and children at the same meeting, or social affair, or? That strikes me that would be very interesting, to meet a whole group of gay people and their parents
yeah.
at the same time.
Well, one of the problems we have here in the city is that there are many more gay people than there are parents, as we know.
Right.
And
because most of the gay people who are here are not from this area, but have in fact moved out here.
Yeah. So one of the functions of the parents group, I find, is sort of to be sort of surrogate parents, in a sense, to many of the gay people, especially the very young gays who have come here and are away from their parents. One of the things that I find regrettable is the fact that most of the organized rap groups in the city are male, and that our parents don't have the opportunity to meet with lesbians to the extent that they should. Most of the lesbian rap groups are small and not the size that the gay men's groups are.
Okay. Also, you're a Bay Area-wide organization. It's not just San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
You have members from the East Bay Peninsula. How far afield does it go?
Burlingame, Santa Monica. No, San Mateo. Somehow I confuse that. A group started in the East Bay in Oakland. There were parents who felt, even though the distance wasn't that great, that if they could form a group there, that they would be more convenient.
Right, cozier.
And we've been, that's one of the things that's been exciting too, is that we've helped other groups get started. Everyone contacts San Francisco. We get letters here from all over the country. When they want gay information, they write to San Francisco. And so we've helped groups get started in San Jose, Sacramento, Chico, Santa Rosa, and those groups all got started originally as a result of their contact with our group in San Francisco.
Within the inclusive name of Parents and Friends of Gays, have you ever had teachers of gays come to the group?
The person I spoke of, who's a Catholic sister, is also a teacher. And it's interesting. She teaches deaf children and became aware that there were gay students in her class. And being the wonderful, sensitive person that she was, she felt that these people who were already had one severe handicap really needed support in all the areas of their life. And she's just been wonderful, you know, with the gay students in her class. As a matter of fact, she marched with us in the parade on this last year, and even wore one of our Parents of Gays T-shirts.
All right.
She's been great. Oh, is another thing I think is very interesting. I don't know if she's going to appreciate all this information on radio, but...
Well, you haven't given a name.
No, I haven't given a name. Is that our banner this year was made by some of the sisters in the art department at the School for the Deaf.
That's support.
Oh, yes.
Do you speak to teachers, for instance? There is now a program going on in San Francisco of in-service training so that the teachers mm-hmm. who teach the family life courses, and presumably and hopefully also some other teachers as well, learn facts rather than myths about various gay lifestyles. Now, a lot of this is coming from various gay activists, including gay teachers, the Gay Teachers and School Workers Coalition, and groups of gay youth. But one of the things, it seems to me, is that there are some teachers who will listen differently when they're talking to parents, because professionally teachers have been trained and taught to respond to parents in certain ways. Are you participating as parents of gays in the consciousness raising of teachers? I mean, what we're really talking about here is that we all have a tremendous obligation to the next generation, however we define that, not so that they don't have to go through some of the same hassles that we did, so that each generation doesn't have to start at the same place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a member of the advisory committee to health and family education program, and I have volunteered for the Speakers Bureau, and we'll be going to another meeting shortly. It's just starting. I can't say that the organization itself, the Parents and Friends of Gays, are a member of this organization. I am a member personally. I have to, you know, keep emphasizing the fact that the majority of the parents in the group do not want to be political, do not want to, in some ways, be associated with some of the work that I'm doing. And at this point, I can only think of two other parents in our group who are prepared to do the sort of work that I'm doing now. But, you know, I want to take issue with one thing. You were saying as a gay person that you're thinking of the next generation. But as a parent, very frankly, I'm thinking of my children right now. And I want a better life for them now in their lifetime. And that's why I'm impatient. And that's why I, you know, feel an urgency about changing attitudes. And I think that people should think in terms of short term. You know, I think that you defeat yourself when you immediately accept the fact, well, you know, it's going to take a long, long time and many, many generations. I think it can be much faster than that.
Well, that isn't what I was saying.
Do.
Although I can understand how it might be interpreted as that, what I meant is that if every generation has to start at the same place that the previous one does, then we're always fighting the same mm-hmm. struggles. And I'm not saying we should give up on accomplishing anything now. I'm just saying mm-hmm. that we should make sure that we don't have to fight the same thing again the next time. That is, that we don't have to start at, when we discuss homophobia, when we discuss violence against gay people, that we don't have to always start at the same zero point and go, but that as time goes on, the consciousness raising becomes easier and can go further because we're starting with a greater level of understanding to begin with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand now what you're saying.
But it's pencil and paper time, so where and when do parents and friends of gays meet? Mm-hmm. And also, how can people get in contact with you and the organization at other times?
Yes, very good. We meet the first Sunday of every month, unless it's during a holiday weekend, like 4th of July or Labor Day, at the Metropolitan Community Church, 150 Eureka, It's in San Francisco between 18th and 19th Streets. Our post office box is 14127. 14127. And that's in San Francisco, 94114. I can also give a couple of phone numbers as contacts.
Okay. Give them.
349-0542.
349-0542.
And 626-6937.
626-6937.
Right.
Okay, and the people can either write, come to the meetings, or phone and get in touch
right.
with us.
Oh, yes. The meetings are at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't think I
okay.
said that.
Okay. And people who might be somewhat hesitant for whatever reason, it's confidential.
Absolutely.
You don't force names or anything like that. They don't have to
right.
sign in. And,
mm-hmm.
and most people who come find at least several meetings to be beneficial to getting their heads together.
Yeah.
About,
as a matter of fact, we've been told by some parents that one meeting seemed to be very, very helpful, and they didn't come back. Because sometimes I will call and say, you know, I was just interested as to why you didn't come back. And they said, well, you know, I didn't really feel a special need. I mean, I kind of got what I was coming for, and you know, so. But, of course, I what I would hope is that people would not be satisfied with simply easing the trauma, but that they would stay with the group until they reach a greater level of understanding and also become involved in the gay rights movement.
Not everyone is going to be as wonderful about getting involved in things mm-hmm. as you are, Bernice.
Oh, no.
Well, it's true. You're probably the most militant mother in San Francisco in some respects.
That very well may be, although I wouldn't be surprised that there are parents who are just not involved with the group who feel they've really gotten it together. We very often see parents marching in the parade isolated, you know, not with our group, and, you know, carrying a sign right out there. So who knows?
Before we end this morning, when you went to Washington in October, you had a run-in with one of our congressmen. Why don't you tell us about it?
Would you really like to hear this?
Sure, sure. I think people should know about this.
Well, I actually had an argument with both Philip and John Burton. I think that the most serious thing happened with John Burton. He got really, really nasty and said to me at a certain point, Now you listen here, lady. You know, you're getting too emotional. And I just turned to him and I said, now you listen here, man. this is a very emotional issue, but I think I've asked you an intelligent question. And whether I had an emotional sound to my voice or not, I think that question deserves an answer. And he was sorry. That he really started with me, because after that, I left the room and I really was emotionally overcome. I didn't let myself cry in front of him, you know, but I just left after a little while. And people told me that after I left the room, that he really got it from everybody. they were angry at the way he had acted to me. Philip Burton wasn't too sweet either. As soon as I started asking a question, I think he kind of sensed that this was going to be a tough question. I think he knows people well enough. He took a look at me, and he thought, I think I'm going to have some trouble with this lady. So he immediately started imitating my New York accent, right? He said, say that word
How
again.
Rude.
Yeah, say that word fear or something. And I said, you know, if you're trying to insinuate I'm not one of your constituents, I said, I'll give you my address. I said, but I think I'd like you to, you know, let me proceed. And he kept very gently and sweetly, but teasing me, you know, so that I wouldn't get the question out. But I got the questions out very well.
And you got your answers, I bet.
Yeah, I didn't get the answers I, I would have liked.
What kind of answers do we ever get from politicians?
Yeah, very true. But the fact is that John Burton did come down and march with us in the rain in Sacramento.
So, once again, Bernice Becker has raised someone's consciousness.
Oh, I would not take credit for that. I may have contributed in some little way, maybe. I don't know.
That about wraps it up. Thank you very much for being our guest this morning on The Gay Life, Bernice Becker.
It was great to be here.
That about wraps it up on The Gay Life this morning. Our guests have been Glenn McElhenney and Ed Sebesta of the Santa Clara Valley Coalition for Human Rights, San Francisco Supervisor Harry Britt, and Bernice Becker, co-chair of Bay Area Parents and Friends of Gays. The Gay Life is engineered by Ern Morgan, sitting in for Rick Sadle, and produced by me, Randy Alfred. I also write two columns, Taking Sides and On Live, for The Sentinel, which is available in gay neighborhoods throughout San Francisco. If you're listening on Saturday morning, this show will be repeated late Sunday night at 1 a.m. So please tell a friend about The Gay Life on KSAN.